Are you on the verse? That's okay. Anything done under the direction of Krishna is transcendental. It cannot be contaminated by material reactions, which may be auspicious or inauspicious. The conception that there are things auspicious and inauspicious in the material world is more or less a mental concoction, because there is nothing auspicious in the material world. Everything is inauspicious because the very material nature is inauspicious. We simply imagine it to be auspicious. Real auspiciousness depends on activities in Krishna consciousness in full devotion and service. Therefore, if we at all want our activities to be auspicious, then we should work under the directions of the Supreme Lord. Such directions are given in authoritative scriptures such as Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, or from a bona fide spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is the representative of the Supreme Lord, his direction is directly the direction of the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master, saintly persons and scriptures direct in the same way. There is no contradiction in these three sources. All actions done under such directions are free from the reactions of pious or impious activities of this material world. The transcendental attitude of the devotee in the performance of activities is actually that of renunciation. And this is called sannyas. As stated in the first verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, one who acts as a matter of duty because he has been ordered to do so by the Supreme Lord, and who does not seek shelter in the fruits of his activities, anasrita karma phalam, is a true renouncer. Anyone acting under the direction of the Supreme Lord is actually a sannyasi and a yogi, and not the man who has simply taken the dress of the sannyasi or a pseudo-yogi. Om Agyanati Milandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Venama Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Levacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in today's, I will repeat once again the translation. He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds, he only, undiluted among men, is freed from all sins. So, there's a reoccurring theme here from the translation, and we can find it several times in the purport. Can say basically two paragraphs of the purport end with all sins for the last three words, all sinful reactions and all sins in the translation. So basically there's mention made about one who understands Krishna's constitutional position is freed from all sins. So, or sinful reactions. I will read the sections of the purport. In that stage only, when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, can one be free completely from all sinful reactions. A man who is not foolish, who is intelligent enough to understand the constitutional position of Godhead, is always free from all sinful reactions. So there's strong statements made about understanding Krishna, and for that reason being freed from all sinful reactions. Now, on the other hand, understanding of Krishna here receives the adjective of being Krishna receives the adjective of being unborn, beginningless, and the Lord of all worlds. So I always find it also interesting. So these two points I would like to speak about, how knowing this is one freed from all sins. And I'd like to start about how one gets to this point with who mentions this, or who is... we understand in several places, for example, in the Krishna book, in the chapter called entitled "The Glorifications of the Vedas," or even when Shiva makes the prayers in the Srimad Bhagavatam towards Krishna, or when Brahma comes to the milk ocean and he says the what's the name of the Sanskrit that they sing? Purusha Sukta, yes. Now, if we look at all these situations, when Krishna is approached by Lord Brahma, when he is being punished, when he goes to Krishna for, or when Indra has made a mistake and approaches Krishna, we can find in every situation there all these personalities telling Krishna, explaining him his, mentioning how you're the control of the worlds, you're unborn, you don't have a beginning, you are Aja. In the purport also Prabhupada mentions this. So this type of glorification might sometimes seem repetitive, or from our perspective, I have pondered about why is it that so many times to, and why do I have to go through reading that, you know, that Krishna is the all this and that and powerful, I know he's the most, you know, he's the controller he's beginningless, and that how powerful he is, and how big he is, and how all the things he can do, and it feels kind of like. So when I reflected upon this, then what came to mind was that, for one thing, a few points came to mind. Our position towards Krishna is identified like this. If we see in this world, when we meet a superior person, let's say, we also utilize the same methodology, placing ourselves accordingly. We, you know, even though this person knows who he is, you know, we still say, you know, you're. How would you call the some of the some Hindu priests you call Panditji and Shriman, or the president you would call Mr. President, Sir, and different words like this to explain their position. And His Excellency. So, and they know, they don't need to be specifically reminded, but this creates the position of you versus them. And so for one thing, you know, it explains like when Shiva does this, or when Brahma does this, for those who would be worshipping Brahma or Shiva. I mean, worshippers of Brahma, there are not many, because he got cursed in the... as far as I remember, in the arena of Daksha, curses went left and right, up and down, and Brahma was cursed that he will not have any worship. And we see right now there's only one temple in India dedicated to Lord Brahma. So not much. We have a Brahma statue in the museum. So the position of the person who is addressing Krishna is made clear. And now the other point which I wanted to mention in this and why we should do this is it further pushes the understanding of who we are and what is our position and what is our position to Krishna, you know, even though we might not like it. And maybe one of the reasons might be why we don't like to hear it is because we come here to lord it over. We come here to this material world to lord it over. So when I'm always, somebody's better than me, you know, it's like, we don't appreciate it all the time. And yeah, in fact, this tendency is very much there. We try to neglect it, but I've heard some devotees making it very bluntly, putting it very bluntly that we are competing with Krishna. That's something we hear, or competing very much to the point we want to push Krishna aside, put ourselves there. So this understanding of whom Krishna is, and in this way mentioning this, helps us place ourselves. And I would put it in a similar category to like deity worship. For deity worship is like placing different activities of showing Krishna's superior or Krishna's position. Right now, taking care of him in this way, and you know, why are we all doing all this? In some places, Prabhupada writes how, this is a good beginning practice is to perform activities directly towards Krishna. And basically it boils down to this concept where in many ways I think, this is very unpractical and why do I need to hear this and so forth. But what I want to say is that making a respectful position to Krishna helps us in a very practical way to elevate the position of our fellow living entities as the children of Krishna, as the children of an important person, and makes us humble. So when the superficial understanding of like one who understands that Krishna's constitutes the constitutional position of Krishna of Godhead, as being the Lord of all lords, helps us to place ourselves at a humble position and place Krishna up and place his devotees up. And in this way, our interactions may be improved. Now when our interactions are improved and we are following this process, we're following understanding Krishna, we understand Krishna through chanting his names, through associating with him in this way, in his merciful forms, because it's only through his mercy that we will be able to understand him. So when we associate with Krishna in chanting, etc., then we free ourselves from our reactions. I heard somebody explaining japa as being, ja for standing for janma and pa for papam. So japa, you get rid of, while doing japa, you get rid of janma and papa, or birth and sins. So when we follow the process, we reach a place where we are free from sinful reactions. However, understanding Krishna's supreme position would, really understanding it would then impede us from further from making offenses, because we understand that offending the devotees is, you know, is the hati, matahati offense, the mad elephant offense, and destroying our, you know, our little garden of, I mean, it doesn't have to be little, but our garden of of the creepers of bhakti, bhakti latas. So, understanding Krishna's position would be creating respectful relationships of respect towards others and Krishna. So when we understand Krishna's greatness, then we will automatically understand the greatness of his devotees and how much he cares for them. If you care about somebody, if you think this person is important, if you think, you know, for example, you know, Mr. Obama to be important, then you will also think his kids to be important, even though they're not Mr. Obama or anything. But so therefore, you will also pay respects to them. And similarly, when we understand that the constitutional position of Krishna, of Godhead, then we're always free from sinful reactions. For we are, we only will understand if we apply ourselves in the process of Krishna consciousness, in the fire of Krishna consciousness. I like that term because it feels sometimes like a fire. But it's, so we apply ourselves that way, and then we, understanding, we do not, you know, because since it's a razor's edge, then we do not commit the matahati offenses to, in order, in this way, to become free from sinful reactions. So this was the point I kind of wanted to make. Actually, we should not misuse our this understanding that when that the process is purifying, and act sinfully on that basis. Several points in this purport have been discussed, and in relation to this point that I'm trying to make about how to understand that one is freed from sinful reactions, we can look at a part of the purport which is dealing with auspicious and inauspiciousness. And there Prabhupada mentions how everything in this material world, being part of this material world, is, you know, technically inauspicious. And only those things which are related to Krishna consciousness are auspicious. And in this way, many things can be made auspicious, but the one thing that it depends upon is its use within Krishna consciousness. So this utilization of what's found in this world is only made a reality when we understand it being connected to Krishna. When we understand it being connected to Krishna, it can turn into something auspicious, because at this stage, and it can be the means of liberation when we see it, but not connected to Krishna, then it will be our means for staying here. And really, mean it would be inauspicious, disconnected to Krishna, and auspicious, connected to Krishna. So in the same point, when our sinful reactions will be cleared, when we see things, when we understand Krishna's constitutional position. In this chapter, the 10th chapter of the Gita, it's called the Uplands of the Absolute. And so there's Krishna, in this chapter, it's a fun chapter where Krishna says, among fish I'm sharks, and among the, I mean, I always remember the lion and the sharks, and what else? Does anyone else want to mention any of these opulences? Basically, connecting this world to Krishna. Any suggestions? Anyone remembers from this chapter? Yes. Yeah, and the taste of water. He doesn't mention. Yeah. The lion and the shark I said already, because those I remember. Among birds, he is Garuda. Himalayas. Yes, from the alphabet is letter A. Among syllables, I'm Om. Among, how do you say, those who shoot arrows, I am, archers. No, wielders of weapons, sorry. Ram, he says Ram, maybe it could be Parshuram, but he says Ram. Ah, yes. I really like that one because it's, I think it's, you know, it appeases me because I find it very difficult, japa. Sorry. So. Gold. Amongst mellows, I'm Radhi's mellows, he said. No, yeah. Yeah, that was last class. I was mentioning how Krishna, his favorite metal was copper. And why? Because it takes so much time to clean. And you need to clean it daily. It's high maintenance. And so, in this way, we remember and serve Krishna. Because he's trying to get us to come to him. he makes it in this way easy for us to connect to him and turn things in an auspicious, make everything from this world auspicious and a means for our liberation. And this is what, this is how I understand that understanding Krishna's supreme position would mean, and therefore one's reactions, sinful reactions, become freed, because we are then dealing with that which is not from this world, and rather, something auspicious, something spiritual. Anyone want to make some comments or have some more ideas of which Krishna is from? Yajnanam japo yajyasmi. I'm just repeating. Krishna, the japa is not, and I'm in, as a defense to why I find it so difficult. it means to, in all other yagyas, you give material, something which is like, money or ghee in charity and so forth, energy. And here, somebody told me this, you sacrifice You know, so you sacrifice your body, your time, and in other yagyas. But in the japa yagya, you sacrifice your body, time, but sacrifice that which is very dear to us, which we keep from when we change bodies also, is our mind. You sacrifice your mind. So something that, you know, this is me personal, now this is my privacy. You sacrifice your privacy, you sacrifice your, you know, that little, no one knows, you know, this is just me and my mind. And so that also you sacrifice, and so that's not easy. And that's why I think, for maybe as well as other reasons, Krishna considers this the ultimate yagya, to sacrifice one's thoughts, one's mind, that which we keep very... So the question is, so when there's referred to japa and no maha mantra, what is the connection? Which mantra were they japaing? Sorry, yeah. In Tirupati, when I visited, I think of Tirupati because I saw Amita Krishna Prabhu here, and so he, when we arrived up there, then we missed the way back, and we had to wait till 3 in the morning, and so basically overnight we were singing Jai Ram, Sri Ram, Jai Jai Ram, and some kind of it was like japa. They have a 24-hour. At night it becomes like japa because they're so tired. So our point was that that's a mantra from, so since Ram was before Krishna, then could have been that mantra. So in the Krishna book, there's mention given of how in the morning Krishna wakes up, even though his wives are holding on to him in Dwarka, and the cockerels making noise, and the rooster. So, and he doesn't, you know, he's not, doesn't think twice. He goes out and washes his mouth, feet, and meditates on himself. So she was asking, does anyone know what does he say or does he do? What does he think? Right. Yeah, we can understand that from... Krishna's dreams, right? He was at night, Rukmini, am I right, Rukmini? was wondering, why is Krishna saying Radha, this, that, at night? And so the opportunity came because Rohini, because it seemed to be from his childhood, had came to visit Dwarka, and since Rohini came, then all the ladies from Dwarka, they came together and started to, you know, wanted to know about what's happening, what are his times in Vrindavan, and especially Rukmini, because she was hearing some dreams like this and that, and what's going on in his dreams, and what is he referring to in Vrindavan and this Radharani, you know, and so they in one of these halls there in the big palaces, they kept a secret meeting while the assembly hall and all the men were, you know, and so they put, if I remember correctly, Subhadra in charge of holding the door. And so Balaram happened to pass by. For me, he seems like not always the he's very quickly angry and emotional, and some ways we can see him like that in the Krishna book. So anyways, he happens to pass by, and Subhadra was listening at the door, and Balaram's like, what's happening? And he started listening at the door, and both of them started expressing ecstatic symptoms. And when Krishna, noticed Balaram's gone, he went to look for him and saw that his sister and his brother are all expressing ecstatic symptoms, listening to Rohini talking about the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And so their ecstatic symptoms were big smiles, and their eyes were huge, like we can see Jagannath. So they're arms retracting into their bodies, and they're listening to the door and Rohini's. So I think it's a good explanation of to say that Krishna is thinking about his pastimes in Vrindavan. So should we conclude on a little bit of a guessing game? So of weapons, who is Krishna? Of all weapons, he says, I am Sudarshan. No. No. The thunderbolt. And among cows, who am I? Okay. Among elephants. Yeah. Among men. The monarch. Of causes of procreation. Yes. Yes. Kandarpa, the god of love. I am Kandarpa, god of love. Among serpents? Vasuki. And among the many-hooded Nagas? Yeah, I am Ananta. And among the aquatics? I am the demigod Varuna. Ha ha. That was the fish. Among the departed ancestors, this is for you, I am among the departed ancestors. I'm Aryama. Among the dispensers of law. Yamaraj. Among purifiers, the wind. Among wielders of weapons, Ram. Among fishes, yeah, there you go. Among flowing rivers, Ganga. Yeah, he's just came from swimming there. And of creators, Brahma. And among compound words, dual compound. Oh, no. Among letters, yeah, that he mentioned earlier. Compound words. So, and finally, among women. Sorry, I didn't know. I don't know the answer. Well, the compound says among compound words, I am the dual compound. So I don't know what further to say. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. Women. Yeah. And among the hymns in the Sama Veda. Yeah, see, that was one for Govinda. Okay. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki.